Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Birmingham, Michigan, and got a degree from the University of Michigan in communications in English. At age 22, unsure of his mission in life, God talked to him and told him he should become a priest. He's the founder of an annual men's day entitled Put Out Into the Deep and hosts a weekly seminar entitled Theology on Tap. He believes that we all ask ourselves the same three questions. His name, Father John Ricardo, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Father John Ricardo, the pastor of St. Anastasia in Troy. Father, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack. Great to be here.
Can you start by telling about your childhood and your parents?
Well, my parents are my heroes. So my dad was the chief executive officer and the chairman of the board of Chrysler Corporation back in the mid to late 70s. So we obviously grew up in times somewhat akin to what we're going through right now in our economy in the city of Detroit as well. But my parents really gave me a tremendous foundation, not only for faith, but just for life. So I grew up youngest of five kids. Three older sisters and an older brother. I'm the spoiled little brat, as they'll be glad to tell you. A mixed family in the sense of faith. My sisters were raised Catholic but became evangelicals. My mom was a Methodist who actually converted to Catholicism later in life. So I just kind of grew up in what I would call a home that had the normalcy of faith. My dad was obviously very successful, so I knew that he didn't need a crutch in life. And yep, I always saw my dad every morning working out, riding his exercise bike and reading scripture. And I saw him every night before he went to bed on his knees. So as a young boy growing up, made a great impression on me, even if I didn't exactly take it to heart. I saw him as a very strong man, and my mom is a very godly woman.
What did you learn from your mom?
What did I learn from my mom? I learned elegance, class, dignity. My mom came from actually a family that used to own the Lions back in the 40s and the 50s, sold them to the present owners of the Lions. And so she just grew up with a lot of wealth, but she grew up with a tremendous sense of class. And she just kind of oozed, not precociousness or pretentiousness, but just kind of oozed dignity.
You grew up in affluence, at least at that time of life. What were your first jobs?
My first job was at cutting lawns. Yeah, that didn't last too long, I don't think. Back then, I was one of those kids who I didn't have to work, obviously. And so I took advantage of that for as long as I could and didn't work. I'm making up for it now as a priest. So I did various outdoor things with some guys in high school and whatnot. I don't think I ever worked before I was in high school, so I was very fortunate in that regard of not having to take something home to help, you know.
You get a degree from U of M in communications and English. You're 22 years old. You're driving along M14 one day. What happened?
I had a vision. So I saw Jesus in my car. Almost as clearly as I see you, not quite, but it was pretty obviously him. I was just going through a time in my life when I was, you know, like anybody, getting out of college, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do with your life. And I had made some decisions which were going to have an impact on my life. And I think I was just beginning to become what I would consider to be a Christian, in the sense that I was actually trying to begin to live a godly life. And I had gone home to tell my dad, in essence, hey, you know, thanks very much for shelling out $100,000 for my my college education. I'm going to go work in a co-op and bake bread. To which he, to his everlasting credit, looked at me and said, son, you can do whatever you want. I'm going to bless it. So while he said that, which I truly believe he meant, at the same time, I'm on my way home to my house in Ann Arbor, and I felt like I had not only broken his heart, because I'm his youngest son, I felt like I had, that my own heart was beginning to break. So I'm crying, you know, I'm really crying on the way home, just feeling like I'm losing my life. And as this happens, I have this vision. So I see Jesus next to me. He doesn't say anything. It was obviously him, although I don't know how I knew that. And at a certain point, he just turns and he's in the passenger seat, if you will. And he stretches out his hand towards me and actually into me. So his hand seemed like it went into my chest. And as that happened, he said to me, John, these are all your dreams, all your goals, all your desires, and everything you want to do with your life. And he just grabbed him and tossed him outside of my chest and out the window. And I watched that and I was like, ah, that's my life you just threw out the window. And then he said, John, I'm going to give you my dream, my goal, my desire, and what I want you to do with your life. And then was gone.
And what did he tell you his dream was?
He didn't tell me anything. He just said that. So I spent, you know, there's a story in the Bible of Jonah. Jonah gets a call from God to go to Nineveh, which is modern Iraq. Jonah says, okay, and he goes to Spain. Wrong direction, okay? I was a lot like Jonah. So I have this incredible encounter of God, and I spent, I don't know, 4 years off and on my way to Spain as opposed to Nineveh. So trying to figure out what his dream meant. And also being scared to death that someone had just taken hold of my life, which is what it felt like.
So 4 years later, you decide that what he wants me to do is be a priest.
No, I didn't decide. I heard a voice ask me to do it. I don't think I ever decided to become a... I decided in the sense that I responded to what I think was a call. Almost as loud as I can hear you now, I heard as I was working one day and living in Ohio, trying to figure out again what I was going to do with my life and reading... I used to bring my Bible with me to work. I was reading it at work one day. And... as a result of reading a particular passage in the Gospels, I just got frustrated and looked up to heaven and said, Lord, I don't get it. What do you want me to do? And I heard a voice crystal clear say, John, I'm inviting you to live single and to do it as a priest, which I had never thought of in my life.
There's some listeners out there saying, come on, Father, let's be real. Mm-hmm. A vision of voices. What would you say to them?
God still works today.
What? As a priest, what do you do all day, Father?
When I was young, I thought they did nothing except say Mass. So I thought, what a great job. You work an hour a week, for crying out loud. I've come to find out we mostly work 80 hours a week, most of us. Hard to describe. I can tell you in all honesty, I don't think there's a happier person in the world than me. No day is the same. And all it is... You know, it could be someone come. I could have appointments all day long. I could be at the hospital praying with someone. Yesterday, I'm praying with a young girl and a hospital who's going through a rough time. I'm with a family who's grieving. I'm preparing for a talk. I teach Bible studies. I do some stuff on the radio as well. So there's never two clones, you know. There's no days that are alike.
We're talking to Father John Ricardo, and I'm Jack Crisul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crisul.
Welcome back. We're with Father John Ricardo, the founder of Put Out Into the Deep. Father, you love sports. Can you talk about the ultimate championship in life as you see it?
Yeah, I do love sports. I think I not only like the thrill of competition, and I like the challenge of trying to discipline the body and to work together as a team and have a goal and all that. But it's a game. It's just a game. Unfortunately, we've elevated it to be life. And while it's challenging, obviously, to get the body in shape, to work together as a team, to put a bunch of people together, to have a kind of a cohesive vision and an end in mind, that's supposed to be a means to the end, which is to understand... If that's true for an element of life, then all of life should have those same principles applied. And most noticeably, the hardest thing to do is to discipline the will. So my body, I can get in shape. That doesn't take a whole lot for most of us. To discipline the will, and to really grow in character, that takes a lot. So it's interesting. St. Paul talks all the time about sports, uses imagery all the time from the games that were around him at the time of the first century, you know. But he would always say that people are denying themselves all sorts of things to win a crown of leaves. We're not going for something like that. We're trying to really live a life which is significant, which doesn't settle for mediocrity. You don't win a gold medal for showing up on the ice. You got to compete, huh? Mm-hmm. Same with life. So we're called to really develop character.
What makes a man great?
Character, which is not the fact that you have gifts. Everybody's got gifts. You know, gifts don't mean... We often confuse that. The fact that someone has a lot of gifts, we think they must be a great man. But gifts are easy for God to give. You know, the fact that you're brilliant, or someone's 6'10", or someone's beautiful, or someone can do whatever they can do with their hands, that doesn't make a person great. What makes a person great is what they do with the gifts they have. And that's a challenge.
In the Our Father, one part says, "Not my will, but thine be done." You talk a lot about surrendering to God. When I pray for what I want. I tell him what I want. What would you say to me?
Well, I do that too sometimes. I'm not that virtuous. I think the key to being able to surrender is I have to know who it is I'm surrendering to. So we have so many people in our culture who don't know God. They know about him, maybe, but there's a world of difference between knowing about somebody and then really knowing them. I can know about you from, you know, reading on the internet and whatnot, but then I can meet Jack, and everything changes when I meet the person. So how can I possibly surrender to somebody that I don't have a clue who they are? So the key to surrender, it's kind of a circular question, the key to surrender is to pray, but not to pray for things. To pray, okay, God, if you're real, go ahead, show yourself, break into my life. And the easiest way to do that is to continually read the scriptures.
So you say that's the key to knowing God, is reading the scriptures.
Absolutely. If I don't read that, then I make up my own version of God, and that wouldn't be God. That would be the God I want, but not the God I need.
Recently, I heard you give a homily, and you said, Lent is about surrendering more to him. It's not about us getting stronger. It's about us getting weaker.
What did I mean by that?
Yeah.
I just like to be provocative. Weak in the sense that I have to try to get more and more out of God's way. That I have to somehow find a way. Oftentimes for people during Lent, you know, we think that this is about a time of I'm going to get better, I'm going to clench my teeth, I'm going to, you know, clench my fists, I'm going to just try harder, I'm going to do this. But then it's all about me. And as a Christian, that's not about me. It's about trying to look more like him. So I have to really sincerely ask God to just take over my life. Confident that what he wants for me is happiness. See, that's the problem. We don't really think that. All God wants for me is happiness. That's why he made me. He's the happiest of all beings who wants us to share in his happiness. That's why I exist, to be happy. Not so I can live a miserable life, but to be happy. But happiness can't come apart from him. Happiness comes from knowing him and then from living now the way he asked me to live, trusting that he's a good God.
Well, what do you say to people that say, well, he don't know what happiness is. I know what I want in happiness. You know, I want cars, I want this, all the materialism. I want liquor, I want booze, I want sex, I want everything else.
They're not enough. You're settling for too little. I had it. It's not enough. The only thing that can ever satisfy any human person is to be loved. That's what I want. That's what people get. That's what people are looking for when they get into those things. They want love, but my BMW can't love me. And you can dent it, and you can steal it. My heart wants to be loved, and God is love.
Recently you said, to be humble does not mean to think little of yourself. To be humble means to think little about yourself. What do you mean?
I think people often... understand humility to me that to mean that you don't think you're anything. Oh, I don't have those gifts. I can't do that. I'm nothing. But that's not humility. Humility is a real honest appreciation of who you are, gifts, weaknesses, strengths, whatever. But it means you don't think much about yourself. You're not preoccupied with yourself like so much of our culture tends to be, huh? I'm more preoccupied with you and with your needs, with the person who's in my field of vision right now. What can I do for you as opposed to what can you do for me?
We're talking to Father John Ricardo, and he says that every one of us has three questions. When we come back, we'll ask him, what are they? I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Father John Ricardo, who believes we all ask ourselves the same three questions. Father, what are they?
Well, I believe that every culture, perhaps until ours, has always asked these three questions, and maybe that's part of the problem that we're having right now. The questions are, why am I here? Where am I going, and how do I get there? Every group of people, until maybe the last 100 years, has always asked those questions.
Can you say those again?
Why am I here? Where am I going, and how do I get there?
And what are the? Do we all have the same answers? What is the right answer?
I believe the answer to all three of those questions we could say is love. Why am I here? Simply because God loves me. Because so many people who worry about the love of God, does God really care about me? The fact you're breathing right now tells you God loves you. I wouldn't be here if he didn't love me. He didn't create me to be a slave. He didn't create me to be in submission in the sense of having his foot over my head. He didn't create me to do the dirty work. He created me to be in a relationship with him. That's why I'm here. Where am I going? I'm going to share in his own love forever in heaven. That's the end for us that we understand. Huh? Scripture tells us that God made us to partake of his own divine nature. Think of that. You're going to bodily share. This is our belief as a Christian, huh? You're going to bodily share in the happiness and the life of God. So that's where you're going. You're going to partake of his own love forever. No end, huh? That's immortality. It isn't the same as eternity. Immortality just means you can't die. That may not be a blessing. Right? To live in this world and to never die would not necessarily be a blessing. We're surrounded by tragedy after tragedy, huh? But eternity is something totally different. Eternity is the fullness of life. It's like you ask me for, you're thirsty and you want a drink. And I come back, you're expecting I'm going to give you a glass of water. And I bring you, a decanter of 25-year-old Barolo red wine. And you go, wow, you've not only satisfied my thirst, you fulfilled it. Huh? That's where we're going. We're going to share in fulfillment.
What is love?
Well, that's a great question. We certainly don't seem to know the answer to that. Part of the problem is in English, we've only got one word for it. So I say, I love the Red Wings. I love chocolate ice cream. I love my mom. Well, we say that, but presumably we don't mean that on the same level for all three of those things. In Italian, there's a great expression for I love you. You say ti voglio bene, which means I want you well. That's perhaps as great an expression I know for what it means to love. I want you well. I want what is objectively good for you. So love is not a feeling. In fact, we often learn what love is when the feelings aren't there. I learn as a priest when I don't have the feelings to be a priest. A married couple learns what love is when they don't have the feelings for each other and they begin to wane. Now it's an act of my will. It's a decision I have to make.
We're talking to Father John Ricardo. When we come back, we'll ask him about hope. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Father John Ricardo. Father, can you talk about hope?
Sure. Probably best to say what hope isn't. And that's to say that hope isn't wishful thinking. So you and I are hoping right now that spring is really going to come. That's what we would say. Oh, I hope spring comes early. But that's there's no reason that spring would have to come early. That's not hope in the sense of the virtue of hope. That's just wishful thinking. So when we wishfully think for something, there's no foundation in reality for it. It might happen, it might not. Hope's something entirely different. Hope has a foundation in reality, and the foundation is the fact that God cares for us, and he intervenes. He acts in history, and he's done incredible things for us in history, most especially by becoming one of us. So that's the foundation of hope.
If I don't have hope, how do I get it? I know I need it, but how do I get it?
Surrender. Back to where we were. I mean, how do I get it? I get it by coming to know him. Again, I can't surrender to God unless I know who it is that I'm surrendering to. It's hard to have hope. I got no reasons to hope in you if I don't know who you are and what reasons that you give me. I have reasons for hoping in God. And we have reasons for trusting or entrusting ourselves to people depending upon what they've done for us, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So it is for hope. So again, it's hard to have the virtue of hope if I have no concept of who God has revealed himself to be.
Can you talk about authority?
Sure, like love. Authority is one of those horribly misunderstood words. Authority is pretty much a four-letter word in our culture, huh? It's an imposition. It's the belittling of me. It's the taking away of my freedom. That's really how most of us experience it, or oftentimes we experience it, because we see authority abused, huh? But that's not authority. That's exactly what I said. It's the abuse of authority. The purpose of authority is to serve. So it's to care for others. In fact, the root of the word authority in Latin comes from the same word, which is augment, huh? To give rise to increase. So you're given authority for the purpose of caring for those entrusted to your care. I'm given authority, not so that I can be high and mighty, but so that I can help others grow in fulfillment and in freedom.
You say that freedom has two parts. Can you talk about that?
Like authority, we tend to misunderstand freedom. So freedom, for me, as a 21-year-old man growing up in this world, was something like, I can do whatever I want, whenever I want. But that's not freedom. That's called lawlessness. I can't drive on the other side of the road on the way home, huh? Chauncey Billups can't, step outside the baseline and shoot. You know, the ball's it's a turnover. So we can't do whatever we want, whenever we want. Freedom is not only freedom from restraints, but it's to be free from the restraints so that I can be free for doing something. So in the kind of classical Christian worldview, it's I'm free from all restraints of sin, huh? These things that keep me from living freedom well, so as to be free for making of my life a gift to other people. That's freedom.
Recently, you lost a very special person in your life, a Father David Donovan, who was your spiritual director in Rome for 3 years. And upon his passing, you said, he's the one that truly taught me how to pray and not merely to say prayers. What's the difference?
In one, the heart is involved, and in the other, it's not. So you can be across the table from somebody that you love, and you can tell that they're obviously not there, even though they're there physically, and you can look them in the eye and say, where are you right now? And they'll tell you whatever's going on, huh? But it's obvious that they're in la-la land somewhere. Oftentimes when people pray, I did this for decades, I think. You just have a litany of things that you're praying for. You're just rattling off a list. But I'm really not involved in my heart. So for real prayer to happen, my heart has to be involved. And by heart, I don't mean the place where I have all these feelings. I mean the place where decisions are made. That's the heart, biblically speaking. That's the difference in saying prayers and really praying.
Some people say, boy,
I envy, I admire you people that just have this faith. You just believe, you trust. I wish I could do that, but Father, I just can't do that.
You can't do what?
Have faith. Trust him.
Well, faith is a gift. So I don't conjure it up. I don't create it. I don't will myself to have it. Faith is a gift. So the first thing I would encourage someone to do is to ask for it, to really pray for faith. That might be the starting point. Lord, just... And if you're going to do that, it's kind of like, you say you want to have a relationship with my dad. I go, well, that's great. How do you want to do that? Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll just think about him. Well, that's not going to give you a relationship, is it? You actually have to pick up the phone. You have to get together. You have to go out to lunch. You have to go out to dinner. You have to spend time together. That's the only way you get a relationship with anybody. That's how you get a relationship with God. So I don't get it. Most of us, you know, at times anyway, we relate to God as if he's our imaginary friend. But I actually have to sit down and talk to him. Or to listen to him, just like you and I are talking right now. I can do that with God. It's a little different because I can't see him, okay? But I can do that.
I get discouraged. I get tired. The situation in the world, the local economy, it gets me down. Do you get discouraged? Do you get in a rut? And what do you do when that happens?
I find discouragement to be the most common attack upon the human person. There's all these things trying to shake our hope, trying to shake our faith. You know, you read the paper and another company goes bankrupt or another terrorist activity happens or whatever it is. It's my own family situation, my own personal life that seems to be in a mess. We're surrounded by opportunities to be discouraged. But again, that goes to the fact that my hope isn't in this. I guess I expect this world to have problems. So my hope isn't here, ultimately. My hope is in the reality that God continues to care for us and has given us the reasons to trust him, most especially his death and resurrection, to know that this is not the end. No matter how bad things get here, this is not the end. Disaster doesn't have the last word. Tragedy doesn't have the last word. Death doesn't have the last word. Chaos doesn't have the last word. Terrorism doesn't have the last word. Love has the last word.
What do you say to our old listeners whose bodies are breaking down, their eyes are going, their legs, they're sick? They don't understand it and they don't feel, they just want to die. You know, take me, Lord. I'm of no use to you anymore. Take me. What do you say to them?
Well, we feel like we have no use when we can't do anything, but we tend, unfortunately, in the culture that we live in, to overvalue doing versus being. So it's also typical, you know, if I can't be productive right now, then I don't have any use. I don't have any value. I don't have any worth. But that's a lie. That's a flat-out lie. My value and my worth doesn't come from whether or not I can do something. My value and my worth comes from the fact that I can be something. That I am here. And as unromantic as it is, when someone's suffering in all the different ways that they are, they actually have a tremendous capacity to help redeem the world precisely by their suffering, which is not something that we want. It's not a good thing, okay? Suffering is not a good thing. But suffering is the means by which God redeemed the world. And we believe that when we suffer, we can cooperate with him in helping to bring that about.
What do you mean, redeem the world by my suffering?
Well, there's only one, as a Christian, there's only one redeemer. His name is Jesus, huh? And yet there's a troubling verse in Scripture where St. Paul says that I fill up in my own flesh what is lacking in the sufferings of Christ for the sake of his body, which is the church. Well, what in the world does that mean? I mean, what's lacking in the sufferings of Christ? Did he almost do enough to save the world but didn't quite, you know, if he could just hung on the cross for another hour, it would have happened? No, of course not. What's lacking is my participation in it. So when I suffer, I actually believe that's when my prayers are most powerful. So the people who are listening, who are the elderly and who are sick or who are disabled in any way, they're the ones who have the most powerful prayers. They're the ones who help bring about change in the world because they can do something with what they've got. They can use it.
We're talking to Father John Ricardo, and when we come back, we'll ask him about the 4th Annual Catholic Conference for Men coming up this Saturday. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Father John Ricardo, who regularly hosts a series entitled Theology on Tap. Father, this Saturday's conference, can you talk about it?
Yeah, the conference is entitled the 4th Annual Catholic Men's Conference in the Archdiocese of Detroit, Put Out Into the Deep. It was originally the brainchild of Mike Timmis, myself, Paco Gavrilides, some different folks in the Archdiocese of Detroit, together working under Cardinal Mita's supervision, just asking, can we get something that the Archdiocese would get behind? This is not the Archdiocese driving this. These were laymen driving this, who wanted to get together to have an event for men, where men could come together and encourage each other, support each other, be brothers together, be called on by some great speakers, take some time to pray together, not hold hands together. You know, that's not what we do when we get together. So that's the conference.
Who can come, and how did you come up with the name Put Out Into the Deep?
Well, if you're a boy, you can come. So anybody out of the womb who's male can come, although they may not get anything out of it if they're, you know, not older than, I would say, probably 12 or 13. If you're a teenager and above, we'd certainly get something out of this. We've got a track for high school kids, so anybody over 13, I think, would really get something.
Any faith?
Any faith, by all means. Okay. Yeah, we're explicitly Catholic, and very much so, but by all means, they're welcome to come. The title comes from Jesus' words to St. Peter in the Gospels, when Jesus is meeting Peter, and Peter's out fishing, and he catches nothing, and then he comes back home, or comes back into the shore, and Jesus tells him, why don't you go back out again and put out into the deep? And as he does so, Peter's nets are filled to overflowing. That expression of Jesus was then used often by Pope John Paul II as kind of a theme for the 21st century and for the new millennium of Christianity, to really be aggressively out there, not in the sense of beating people over the head with the Bible. That's not what I mean by aggressive, but by not being ashamed about your faith and telling, for men to tell men about the relationship that they have with Jesus.
There's a lot of women listeners who say, wow, I've got to get my guy to go to this, whether it's the husband, son, grandfather, father. So they go to them, and the response that comes back is, I don't need that. That's not going on my honey-do list. What should the mom do?
Well, I would buy them a ticket anyway and encourage them to go. So the first thing I do is buy them a ticket. Second thing I do is I would listen to the day, because it'll be on the radio, and then we have tapes available and whatnot. You can get onto our website, which is www.stanastasia.org, and you can listen to the talks there after the event, so that you can hear it yourself. And then just leave the tapes around. Let the guys, you know, hear it as you're listening to them. And then I'd pray that the men who are there might find a way somehow, whether it's, you know, who knows, someone's at work would have gone to it, so someone your husband works with goes to it and they hear about it. So pray that one of those people somehow interacts with your husband or your son or your, you know, whoever it might be that you would have wished had gone to it.
I heard you say recently that God is the greatest networker of all time.
Absolutely. So that's what I'm saying here. I mean, pray that God will arrange things so that someone in your husband's life or your son's life will talk to him about the conference. It'll change lives. I mean, I know men who've come to this who thought, oh, gosh, I thought this was going to be really effeminate, or who knows what they thought it was going to be. And instead, what it was, like I say, men calling men on to be great and to live lives of character and virtue.
How can I learn more about it?
Well, you can do two things. You can either call 734-459-9558, or you can log on to the internet at www.mensfellowship.com.
What's the main theme of this year's conference?
Theme is inspired by Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation. And the theme is, what legacy will I leave behind? I myself am from my own life and just working with men for lots of years, I'm really convinced I can't speak on behalf of women because I'm not inside their minds, but inside a man's mind is this great fear of being mediocre and a great shame for knowing when I've caved, you know, like when I had a choice to do something right and I didn't do it, when I could have been courageous and I just bailed. So the theme is inspired by Brokaw and really trying to get men to look at right now in their life, kind of to arrest them where they are, whether they're 52 or 32 or 82. Okay, where are you? What difference have you made? What can you do with whatever years you've got left to really make a difference in the world in which we live? Because what can one man do? That was our theme a set of years ago. What can one man do? Well, one man can be so powerful that he can help the Soviet Union fall without a single shot being fired. And that was Pope John Paul II, huh? Without a single shot. I mean, imagine that. The former Soviet Union doesn't exist right now. That would have been unthinkable for you and me 25 years ago. It's not here. It's not here through a lot of people's work. But the former premier of the Soviet Union rather candidly acknowledges, Gorbachev, that it's not here simply because of Pope John Paul II, that he, more than anybody else, helped bring about the fall.
You have a series called Theology on Tap. What is that all about?
Theology on Tap is an outreach whereby we try to take the gospel into informal situations. So there's so many people who would never come to a, you know, a church to listen to a talk or whatnot. So we go to them. So we'll go to a bar, we go to a restaurant, and we just kind of set up shop. We'll get a room in the restaurant, or we'll take over one segment of the bar, and we'll give lengthy talks that are really interactive, very dynamic, very engaging. And then there's a time for questions and answers afterwards for people. So we hit all the topics that are going on in the culture, you know, that people have questions about. Da Vinci Code's going to be coming out as a movie, so we're going to do a series on that, help people understand what this thing's all about.
Father, who do you most admire?
I most admire two people. One is Pope John Paul II, who I had the great good fortune of meeting on several occasions. And when you met the Pope, who was this unbelievable man, who, you know, what one man can do. He can do obviously enough that China would not let him into their country. They were so afraid of him, even in his old age. You know, an 82-year-old man can't stand up straight, can't speak without drooling, he slurs his words. They were so afraid of him, they wouldn't let him into the country. I admire him beyond all telling. He was a great athlete, great playwright, great statesman, great mystic, great man. And when you met him, you had this experience of him challenging you without ever saying it, but him just looking in the eye saying, "Jack, I'm just a man. You can be great, just like I'm trying to be great, so be great." So I admire him. I admire more than anybody my own father, who is really my hero in life. I saw him do incredible things to save Chrysler, and now I'm seeing him do incredible things to care for my mother, whose health has not been good for a number of years. So here's this tremendous man given a tremendous example of what love really looks like as he puts his wife above everything else.
25-plus years ago, he and Lee Iacocca went to Washington, D.C. and got the federal bailout for Chrysler. What do you think your dad would say to the leaders of the Big Three today, the union workers, the union leaders, all the people in the Tier 1, Tier 2s about the phenomenal challenges we have today?
I can't answer for him, obviously, but I imagine he would say something along the lines of, first of all, pray for wisdom. Pray for real wisdom. The grace to see the situation. You know, if we're not up on top of the mountain, we can't see what's happening. I think right now we're in a valley. We can't see the way out. So pray for wisdom. Pray for the grace to get up high and see what's going on. Second of all is pray as though everything depends on God and work like everything depends on you. So work hard. Get out of the way. And don't be afraid to sacrifice yourself, even if it's for the good of the company.
Father, thanks for
You're
coming.
Welcome.
This has been an hour of tremendous insight and concepts. Thanks for all you do for all the people in this community. Please tune in next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.